You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
What's this button do? Whoa!
You are now entering the green world.
Earlier this year, an Oxfam report revealed that once again, billionaire wealth increased in 2025. This time, three times faster than the previous five-year average. In January, Oxfam also proclaimed Plutocrat Day on the 10th of January, on which the richest 1% have already exhausted their annual carbon budget. Professor of Business and Society at the University of Technology in Sydney, Carl Rhodes, has delved into the myth of the heroic billionaire and the problems generated for political processes and global inequality. I spoke to Rhodes about the influence of billionaires, in particular with regard to climate action, starting by asking what the myth of the heroic billionaire is and how it is perpetuated.
Certainly. I mean, the myth of the heroic billionaire, this is really the idea that somehow billionaires, they're like the protagonists of a kind of globalized American dream, and they're exalted for being winners in life's game because they're so great and they're kind of deserving of all of the riches they have and all of the accolades they have. And there's something, you know, heroic about these people, and something that, to my mind, billionaires represent the failure of a society that has produced massive inequality. But at the same time, you know, these people are presented as being great, whether it be people, you know, watching with glee as they see Jeff Bezos get married in Venice. I mean, it just seemed like a spectacle of kind of gross injustice to my mind. But there seems to be the whole idea of billionaires being kind of mythologized in this way provides a kind of justification that inequality is okay. And a lot of it does go back to a globalization of the American dream. But bear in mind, the American dream was a dream that anyone who could go to America and be successful, irrespective of their background. So immigrants would move to America largely from a recently kind of post-feudal Europe where class system was entrenched and how well you got in life was down to a kind of birthright. But the idea that America was a huge promise of opportunity for everybody. But it's become mutated now because it's no longer opportunities for everybody. I mean, it might mean that anybody could succeed in life, if you like, but most people won't. And in a sense, inequality around the world is getting worse. Even in New Zealand, one of the most egalitarian countries, social democratic countries in the world, you're having increasing problems with wealth inequality. But now the hope's not so much that everybody can succeed, but only a few people will. And in a sense, my question is, like, how do these people get away with it? You know, how does society get away with these massive inequalities, which nothing is really being done about? And in many ways, it's because we're told that heroes are the people to be heroized. Donald Trump, he's the worst example. He splits the whole world into two groups. You're either a winner or a loser. And if you're a winner, it's because you're great. And if you're a loser, because you haven't succeeded and become wealthy, which could be because of lack of opportunities, discrimination, structural problems, calling you a loser, that just entirely puts it down to you and means society has nothing to do with it. So this is a kind of myth of the heroic billionaire that I think really needs to be debunked if we're going to try and move to a fairer and more equal society.
So you've talked about here a couple of things that I did want to bring up in this interview. Firstly, you talk about, or you maybe suggest that this is kind of an Americanized idea, or the myth of the heroic billionaire is certainly very popular in America with people like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and all these kinds, and Donald Trump, of course. But I wanted to kind of both understand maybe how this influences other countries like Australia and New Zealand, where we maybe don't have such a intense glorification of billionaires, but still, what is the influence of billionaires on democratic processes, on political systems? Like, can you talk a bit about some examples of that influence specifically?
Sure. I mean, there's kind of two parts to that question. I mean, firstly, I think that this has, as I said, has been a globalization of the American dream. And that globalization has come through the broad changes in the world, particularly the liberal democratic world, you know, often under the banner of neoliberalism. But the kind of changes we saw starting in the late 1980s under the guidance of Margaret Thatcher in the UK and Ronald Reagan in the US came, it was all about much more individualism and individual kind of enterprise and entrepreneurship and as becoming prized. So this kind of move away from a kind of collectivist shared responsibility approach has really gone across the world. And I would have thought certainly here in Australia, where I am, and for what I know in New Zealand as well. So there has been a broader cultural shift, albeit the United States being the possibly the most extreme example. But we still see the influence of billionaires very strongly, particularly billionaires get involved in politics. I mean, the richest person in Australia is Gina Rinehart, kind of mining wealth which she inherited and grew from her father, Lang Hancock. And we see a lot of engagement there with politics local. She is also a huge fan of, you mentioned his name, we have to mention it a few times, unfortunately, a huge fan of Donald Trump and a member of, I believe, what she calls the Trumpettes, which is a group of female fans of Donald and is seen from time to time in Mar-a-Lago with other rich people from around the world. So there's a kind of global network involved there as directly in politics and trying to influence politics, often in their own image, in their own favor, and in a way, because it's usually right-wing politics and increasingly the populist version of right-wing politics, again, which arguably is the politics that will serve to preserve their personal interests as wealthy people. You know, you saw it in the US with Elon Musk putting in, I think it was $250 million to support Donald Trump's election. And again, the US is just a kind of hyperbolic version of everywhere else. But that same things are happening. Certainly, you see here in Australia, Clive Palmer with his somewhat bizarre attempt at getting into Parliament with his trumpet for Patriots Party. I mean, he's almost like a parody of billionaires, but because his actions are so kind of crude and bizarre. But so you see the same phenomenon around the world in terms of how this is happening. And as I said, to some extent, it is an actual network of real people around the world who know one another, you know, as you see in that example with Gina Rinehart.
It seems, especially in the US and I mean in Australia, with those seemingly right-wing leaning billionaires or wealthy people who are influencing politics in their own states, how does this kind of influence global cooperation on issues, especially on climate change is what I'm interested in, but how does, as you've called it, a billionaire-driven economy influence how politics is run on a global level, especially when it comes to things that require a lot of cooperation and where that may influence decision-making, I suppose, or what kind of interests are being heard in those spaces?
Yeah, I mean, there's always some irony, isn't there, where you see ultra-rich people flying on private jets to the COP conferences or to the World Economic Forum in Davos to talk about climate change. I mean, on the one hand, wealthy people have much bigger carbon emissions than anyone else, so they're kind of more guilty of it. But I think the problem here is that you also see wealthy people trying to control the agenda. You saw it when Jeff Bezos created his gigantic climate fund some years ago. But then you think, this guy owns Amazon, a company whose whole business is based on transport and logistics and getting things moved fast from one place to another on planes, trains, and automobiles. Maybe he wants to control the agenda for other reasons. I think you may have seen in 2021, Bill Gates, another one of the richest people in the world, released this book called How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. Like, why would he have any expertise in this? He doesn't have expertise. All he's got is money. Like, why should wealthy people with no expertise, so they have no technical expertise, they don't have any democratic mandate from the people, suddenly think they should call the shots on the biggest political issues in the world? And you see it with climate, as with this book about climate disaster. The only authority Bill Gates has is that he's rich. Now, that sounds remarkably feudal, like gone are the days where we had to obey kings just because of who they were. So it's a deeply undemocratic approach to this. And also, you've got to ask yourself, you know, if wealthy people want to control the climate agenda, in whose interests will they control that? When you look at so much of the behavior of wealthy people, is in the favour of ensuring that their own wealth is preserved. The idea that it might be driven by a genuine interest in saving the world from climate disaster for future generations, we have to be sceptical about, because if they cared for that, they'd be worried about saving the massive problem in economic inequality that they absolutely represent for future generations. And there's clearly no sign of that happening. So I'm not an expert in climate, obviously, but in terms of from a political point of view, I would say the issue needs to be managed through democratic governance and international cooperation based on expertise, not just what Mr. Moneybags has to say about it, and he's only got a platform because he's rich.
In terms of how we address the problem of billionaires, there seems to be kind of maybe two different facets that I'm aware of with how you kind of address this problem, especially when it comes to issues like global cooperation on things like climate change. Firstly, would be imposing some kind of wealth tax or a billionaire tax. That's more of a national level approach, I suppose, to addressing the problem altogether. The other side is kind of maybe leaning more into the fact that billionaires do have this kind of influence and maybe encouraging them to champion climate action in a way or to use their wealth for the purpose of climate solutions. What are your thoughts on either of those, or is there another approach to this problem that you would advocate for?
I'm fully in support of wealth taxation to the first part of your question. And I think that, without changes to the way that society funds itself, which is in a country like Australia, primarily through income taxation, where if you earn money from assets, from wealth, then you're relatively taxed a lot less. That's a fundamentally unfair system, particularly as wealth inequality expands. So without moving into a system of really reforming taxation around the taxation of wealth, we're only going to see inequality get worse. And to some extent, there needs to be some international cooperation there as well, so you don't see rich people kind of jumping around, kind of looking for tax havens and shopping around for cheap tax, which they do and which corporations also do. So there's a long way to go down that road, and also a lot of governments not willing to address the issue of wealth tax because of its kind of potential political ramifications and vote losing, because you'll get all kinds of scare campaigns that, you know, taxing the ultra wealthy will be translated into your house being taxed because, you know, you're a homeowner, which is completely bogus. There's a whole lot of scare campaigning there. In terms of the question of climate, I honestly believe that a form of considered and balanced democratic governance and international cooperation is what is required. I mean, if it's going to rely on convincing billionaires that they should help out, yeah, some will, some won't. But do we really want our fate to be the world's fate to be put in the hands of the discretion of a small cadre of ultra-wealthy people, or do we want it more to be based in a broader political support from citizens of different countries? I would say the latter is more important. So by all means, tax wealthy people in order to fund the initiatives that are required, but for it to be at the discretion of the wealthy, I'm not sure that's really a viable democratic alternative, and we just become then, do we have to go and kiss the ring hoping that some wealthy person will help us out, you know, and we just become at their service and potentially at their victims. And you know, this idea of some kind of benevolent billionaire coming to solve our problems, I don't see a bright future in relying on that if the past's anything to go with.
How do you think that the wider public should respond or react to this problem, to growing wealth inequality? Are there any methods that exist to hold billionaires to account in this space?
Well, I mean, it's complex global matter. I mean, I think at the moment, the initial problem is the growing problem of economic inequality, particularly wealth equality, hasn't been, I don't think, fully recognized as being a major political crisis that needs to be dealt with. Certainly, not, I know that climate's still contentious, but there's still now a broad consensus that climate is an issue. And that took a long time for that to get on the political agenda. I mean, it's not long ago here in Australia that we had Tony Abbott and the like, still, you know, climate deniers, you know, holding the position position of prime minister. And I know there's been a lot of debate this year again around whether net zero is a viable target. But that now is firmly on the political agenda. Questions of wealth inequality are not. So I think the first step is we need to make it a major political agenda. It needs to kind of get into the window of what's recognized, because it's increasingly a problem. And it's not a problem for people of my generation as much as it's a problem for younger people. This is an intergenerational problem, as people are closed out of housing markets, unable to build assets. And this is no longer just a problem of poverty, but economic inequality now is a problem for working, educated people with good jobs. Not just, it's becoming a broader and broader problem. So we have to get it more firmly on the economic agenda. Once that's the case, the kind of policy options to address that, are relatively clear. I mean, taxation is one of them, providing universal basic income, broadening education opportunities, broadening childcare, various ways of creating more equal opportunities, and many other things can be done. For most places at the moment, the political will to do that doesn't exist. And I think that is the first step. And in a sense, that's why I wrote the book, as making my own small contribution to try and talk about this more, and which is why I'm always happy to be speaking on the radio to people like yourself.
That was Professor of Business and Society at the University of Technology in Sydney, Carl Rhodes, on the global political influence of billionaires.
That was The Green World.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.